Welcome to Your Permission to Pause, a podcast with uplifting and inspiring content to help driven female leaders who want to work smarter, not harder. Today's topic is about working smarter, not harder. And it's something I've spent years tweaking, perfecting, and probably still a work in progress. But I want to share with you today some of the things that I've learned along the way from my own personal experience, but also from working with my clients. There's definitely not one size fits all. There's definitely no silver bullet. But today I plan to offer you a selection of things that might help you just move the needle a little bit in the right direction so that you can work smarter, not harder. So let's start with multitasking. One of the things that I think, well, probably the biggest thing that gets in the way, and women in particular have been fed, well, women have been fed a narrative that not only can they multitask, but they can do it really, really well. And it's a story that I definitely bought into for many, many years, and actually wore it like a little badge of honor, if I'm honest. And in a world where the demands seem to be getting more and quicker, you know, this idea of multitasking, of being able to do two or three things simultaneously to, in inverted commas, save time and be more productive, why wouldn't you? It's like being sold the dream. And, you know, if I'm honest with you, probably in certain areas of my life, I still think I can do it and do it well. Like when I stick on a Netflix box set while I'm pairing the socks or doing the ironing, or, you know, listening to a podcast while I'm out on a walk. But some of those things, you know, you can sort of tick off as, okay, maybe they are multitasking and maybe they're acceptable. But that's because some of those actions are automatic. So if I'm walking, it's an automatic action while I'm listening to a podcast. Pairing socks doesn't really take up much cognitive function, let's face it. That's almost a meditative process in its own right. So I think there are, you know, the odd exception to the rule where we have got something that feels automatic, you can probably get away with it. But when we think about the more important things in life, whether that's with our families or whether it's in the boardroom, then that's where multitasking, we need to sort of throw that idea away. And the reality is that it's not really that we have the ability to do those tasks simultaneously. It's that we have got quite good, or so we think, at switching from task to task, because our brains can't actually do multiple tasks at the same time and do them well. So this idea that we can do it, we need to sort of blow that out of the water, really, and think about what is actually happening to our brain. If you think about some of the tasks that you might be switching to and from on an average day, you might be preparing a presentation to present to your leadership team. You might need to analyze some data, capture that in a PowerPoint. At the same time, you've got messages coming in from the Teams chat from your colleagues and your team. At the same time, you might have pings and dings going off on your phone from family members, friends, you know, WhatsApp chats, et cetera, et cetera. So we're all living in a world where there are these multiple sources of distraction and interruptions and calls to carry out or engage in a task. And just thinking about that, you know, can probably raise people's stress levels, you know, sort of imagining it. And on average, it actually takes people 9.5 minutes to get back into productive workflow after switching between digital apps. And that's just digital apps. So if you've got Slack running, WhatsApp, some social media, maybe, you know, Teams, before we even get into email, 9.5 minutes to get back into a productive workflow. I think that's quite amazing. And if you think about how often we're doing that every day, even in just 1 hour of your day, how many times do you switch from one thing to another? And each time you're losing 9 minutes of productive workflow as you switch back, that's an amazing amount of time that we're losing. And in the same study, 45% of people said that context switching makes them less productive. So it isn't just about digital apps. It is about the context of the work that we're doing. I mean, I'd say I'm pretty disciplined and able to focus relatively well. But I know as technology's moved on, as demands have got higher, as things have changed in my life, then switching from task to task definitely feels like it drains me a lot more than things used to when we were, gosh, I can remember the days where we used to have to plug a wire into the telephone cable to download emails. I mean, how times have moved on, or maybe I'm just really old. But I think aside from productivity, it's also, you know, we live in a world where everyone's complaining about being tired and exhausted. Well, the people I hang out with are anyway. The same study said that 43% of people said that switching between tasks caused them fatigue. And the reason that we can feel so tired might be because our brains, you know, are not computers. They're pretty amazing, but they have limited capacity to hold information in mind at any given time. So it's really important that we recognize, I think, that this idea of multitasking is not actually leading us to greater productivity. And it's certainly not helping us feel good. And we need to really reframe this and recognize and acknowledge that we've actually just got very well practiced, maybe not that good, but very well practiced at task switching. And I want to talk to you about the reasons why that's not good. The first thing is that I've alluded to is productivity. Now, I know from my one-to-one clients and the work that I do with my leadership teams that somewhere in the conversation, we're going to talk about how to do more with less. So more with less time, more with less resources. People are looking for the productivity hacks or mechanisms, frameworks, techniques to help them become more productive. And the way that shows up in a lot of the work that I've done over the last few years is it's disguised as resilience. So people often come to me and say, we need to do some resilience training. And when you dig into what's really happening, they're looking for people to be more productive because they've got bigger targets or they've got bigger financial gains to make. They have got decreased resource and their targets haven't changed. So all that familiar stuff. And so they're looking for ways to become more productive. So in terms of productivity, when some researchers brought people into labs to test it, they found that people were not multitasking. They were switching from task to task. And that meant reconfiguring their brain, not actually doing tasks simultaneously. And that came with a payoff. So focus decreases, and therefore so does productivity. So if you go back to the imaginary but very familiar scenario of the presentation that you're trying to prepare and analyze the data to put it into something that's meaningful, the Teams chat's going off, the WhatsApp's going off, the pings and dings are going. And if you're working from home, because of course you've chosen to do that so you could focus with no distractions in the office, then Amazon turn up or whoever brings your deliveries. And so every time you are having to move from that one task to another, not only have you lost time away from creating the presentation by answering the call, going into the Teams chat, opening the door, but you've lost the time that it's taken every time you pay attention to something else because your brain needs time to reconfigure. And that's why, on average, according to the research, it takes people 9.5 minutes to really get back into a productive flow. It doesn't mean you can't get back into the task, but in terms of being your most productive self and therefore efficient, it needs time to reconfigure. So it's no wonder we arrive exhausted at the end of the day with this constant resetting and resetting. And it's taken up a lot of energy as well as focus, which means then in turn, you become slower. So decreases productivity. Secondly, if that wasn't enough, it impacts your IQ. So a study with a small cohort of people were analysed in terms of their IQ scores. So they looked at their IQ scores when they were being interrupted and distracted and switching from task to task, and when they weren't. And on average, their score dropped by an average of 10 points. So their IQ score actually dropped by an average of 10 points. And I'm sure none of you are using your IQ scores as a KPI right now, but I'm pretty sure, based on the people that I talk to on a regular basis, that you are probably having days where you just don't feel quite as sharp, you're not on your A game, and you might just feel like you're losing your edge. And of course, that creates a whole other spiral of self-doubt and self-deprecation and, you know, the famous imposter syndrome. So I would really encourage you to think about the amount of technological distraction in particular that you are experiencing, and see if you notice a pattern in terms of how focused you feel or how sharp you feel. So the third thing to consider is creativity and innovation. And many of my clients have creativity or innovation as one of their values. And in many cases, one of their key competencies. It's something that many organizations measure their team on. It's one of those traits and skill sets that lots of organizations certainly recruit against and measure performance against. Organizations tend to value people who can think outside the box and problem solve in a creative way so that they have the edge. And there was a chap called Professor, maybe you wouldn't appreciate being called a chap, but a gentleman, shall we say, Professor Earl Miller, who's won many awards in the field of neuroscience. And he explains that creative thinking comes from your brain shaping new connections with what it's already seen and heard. So when you're in periods of free, undistracted time, your brain will automatically go over everything it's absorbed and will make new connections in new ways. So if you're spending time multitasking, which we now is actually task switching, you're probably using up capacity for it to think creatively even. So there's literally no space in the brain, you know, a bit like the hard drive is full. So it's really difficult to have truly original thoughts if you are using up, I guess, the data, if we want to compare it to a phone, switching from task to task to task. And finally, if it wasn't enough that we've now decreased productivity, lowered our IQ by an average of 10 points, and impaired our ability to be creative and innovative, let's look at our general mental health and well-being. If we're constantly engaging in task switching and not allowing our brain to focus on one thing and be present with one thing, we actually increase our incidence of mental health. It definitely increases our levels of stress, and it decreases our overall sense of well-being, because all of this overstimulation is doing lots of amazing things that are not particularly inviting to our neurotransmitters and our hormones, and we end up with an imbalance that just creates lots of stress and anxiety. And it might not be, you know, on a clinical level, but certainly there are people that can very easily be drawn into this sort of low-grade panic and low-grade anxiety. And that in itself is just not healthy for our system. So what can you do about it? Well, you could just stop, I suppose. But if it was that easy, we'd all be monotasking right now. There are a couple of things, well, there are more than a couple, actually. There are about five things. Actually, I think I got to seven on my list. I did make some notes if you hear some rustling of papers, because as I said, there's no one size fits all. There's no silver bullet. You have to find what works for you. So let's have a look at what's on the list. First of all, yes, you could just stop and you could ditch the idea of multitasking and move into monotasking. I mean, single tasking, whatever you want to call it, doing one thing at once. Really obvious when you say it. But if we're giving a task our full attention, we will increase our productivity. We will definitely increase our cognitive function, likely to decrease our levels of stress once we get used to the idea and see the benefits, and definitely increase our overall sense of well-being. And I guess you could argue that's just being mindful. So any of you that practice mindfulness will know that that's about being fully present with what is happening in the moment. But most of us, you know, haven't worked out yet an effective way to manage the distractions. So how do we manage to engage with single tasking and give things our full attention? Well, first of all, you need to limit the distractions. And that is, again, not rocket science. It's quite a simple thing to do, but it is about the discipline. So for example, I am practicing what I preach today, and I have put my phone on airplane mode, which is a big move for me because I do get a little bit of FOMO, but I know that as soon as I see something from the corner of my eye, it will be very tempting to go and read what that is, even though I'm unlikely to take an action on it. So airplane mode, switching off email notifications. Yesterday, I got really irritated by Google Chrome sending me constant notifications of news items, and I literally just couldn't close them down quick enough. That's because I've got a new laptop and all the settings have gone, I don't know, back to factory settings. So I then had to go and Google how to turn those off. So, you know, things like that, get all your notifications off unless you absolutely need them. And where you have got something to do that requires that real edge when it comes to cognition and productivity, just get the distractions off. I know some people who have even taken certain social media apps off their phones now and only have them on the laptops, because then they've got to physically go and log in. So little things like that can be really helpful. But of course, you know, distractions are not just digital distractions. There are lots of other things that can draw us into other tasks. And that's about boundaries, but that's a whole podcast episode in its own right. So I would say start with the technology. Think about how you limit those distractions, and then that will help you single task a little bit more. The next thing, though, is thinking about what you start on, because if you've got to that stage of overwhelm, it is actually really tricky to think about what you do first, because then there's that pull to, oh, but if I don't do that while I'm doing this, then that's two things that won't be delivered on time. But again, challenge that thinking, because it's a false economy. So think about how you're prioritizing. Again, there are different techniques that will work for different people. Some people like to do the most important thing first. Many of you have probably heard of the Eisenhower matrix, which is looking at urgent versus important. That requires some work, I think, because you've got to think about whose criteria you're measuring that against. But essentially, not all things are equal. So I would really encourage you to prioritize against your own bandwidth, because there are certain tasks that take more mental or physical or emotional energy. So think about those kind of criteria as well. An idea that I really love, and again, I'll probably do an episode on this in its own right at some point. Greg McKeown wrote a book called Essentialism that I was introduced to last year. And this is a really, well, again, it's obvious when you know. And if you read it, you know, don't want to diss the book. The book's amazing. It is really thinking about what is the most important thing and how do we get rid of the rest. So the general idea behind it is do less but better. Now, for lots of you that are high achieving, ambitious individuals, doing less, you probably haven't got any further from that in the sentence. But if you're doing them better, there is something that comes from that in terms of how we feel, and therefore what we're then able to move on to. So it can actually be a really helpful self-fulfilling prophecy if you can get your head around it, because we tend to have a tendency to overcommit what we are capable of doing and then underestimate with an abundance of optimism what is actually achievable. And that's what leads us into this idea of multitasking. But then we, you know, can feel some shame and guilt about being overstretched or not doing things to a standard that we know we're capable of, or we overwork, and that has consequences on our mental and physical health in itself. So do less but better is one idea that comes from thinking like an essentialist. And it's all about getting the right things done, not getting more things done. But I think the irony in that is that when we get the right things done, we actually have the capacity to do more of the things that we want to do, because we're really striving for this increase in productivity. And that is possible if we focus our time and energy. You know, all of these things are not rocket science, but it is about just looking at things in a slightly different way. The big idea really, I guess, behind thinking like an essentialist is do less but better, get the right things done, and then focus on what is really important and eliminate the rest. So that's where your distraction management comes in. And to quote one of my favorite gurus when it comes to high performance, Patrick Lencioni, if everything is important, then nothing is important. And it's something that I came across, that quote, about 15 years ago. And I use it with, I'd say, 99% of the teams that I work with, because most of the people I work with are high achieving individuals and teams that are very ambitious. And it's very easy to claim from our subconscious that everything is important. But actually, if everything is, then nothing actually is. So focusing on what is important and eliminating the rest is going to require you to have some really honest conversations with yourself if you're going to pull yourself out of the operational weeds. So have a think about that. Think about thinking like an essentialist. So what have we covered? Single tasking, prioritizing, doing what's important, limit the distractions. From a well-being perspective, given that this podcast is all about how do you achieve more without abandoning that in the process, taking breaks and getting some distance can really help with focus. And if your focus is improved, then guess what? Your productivity is very likely to increase as well. I don't think she'll mind me saying this, but my daughter is studying for one of many exams right now. And she had a really heavy day last week on one of her learning days. They were doing 4 days on another module, building up to another exam. And it didn't run to time. And it meant that they had an additional couple of modules, I think, to revise or learn for themselves in the evening, having spent 9 to 5 already online. And she sort of ended the day feeling pretty overwhelmed. And fortunately or unfortunately, whichever way you want to look at it, she had a social event that evening. And it was one of those things that she couldn't really back out of. So she was sort of looking at the calendar, knowing that she had a mock exam the day after. And, you know, again, was this real sense of how do I be really productive and focused, because I need to learn this to then deliver against the exam criteria tomorrow. But I've only got so many hours between now and tomorrow afternoon of which I need to sleep, eat, and learn a whole load of other modules. And because she had this pre-organized commitment to go out socially, she did go. It was a boyfriend's birthday, so she couldn't really dip out of that. And it felt really counterintuitive to her to do it. But she went, and she came back the next day and was just in a much better place, much more focused, able to engage in a more productive way with what she needed to do. And I'm delighted to say she managed to get through it and did pass the mock exam. However, one of my digressions, the point to that is, it will feel counterintuitive to step away. It will feel counterintuitive to take a break, because sometimes we just feel, or we convince ourselves that we're in flow and we just need to plow on and march through it. But getting distance definitely helps you to get perspective and some focus. And ideally, I would recommend, you know, even if it's just a walk around the block or even a few laps around the garden, fresh air, nature, movement, all definitely good things. I've started taking food breaks, actually, not to eat, but to cook. Warning, I'm about to go off on another tangent, but I've just got a new kitchen gadget that is very exciting. So I'm taking breaks in between heavier sessions when I'm at home, obviously, not when I'm in a corporate setting, to rustle up some really nice food and stock up the fridge. So again, find what works for you. But the really simple thing is go and have a walk outside, get some distance, do something different, stick on some music, have a dance if you like. And that can really help. So what else have I got on my list? Visibility. So in terms of working smarter, not harder, you know, I do hear lots of people that say, oh, I'm a real list person. Lists work for some people. They don't work for others. My accountant loves a list. She loves ticking things off. It's really motivating for her. I do like a list, I have to say. But there have been times where my list becomes a shaming tool. So in times where I felt really productive, I haven't felt really productive at all, in times where I felt really overwhelmed and really stressed and needed to be really productive, I, you know, do a brain dump, put everything on my list and start to tick them off. But if I don't get through them or I don't feel like I've made enough headway with them, you know, that has been a tool to beat myself up. So again, this goes back to prioritize what is the most important thing. But giving it visibility can be really helpful. And it doesn't matter if it's a list and you tick it off or you highlight it or whatever you want to do, or you just pick your top three things and have it on a post-it note on the wall by your desk or whatever. But having some visibility of what you need to do can also really help with working a little bit more effectively. And moving on from that, you know, going to the next level is then thinking about, well, whose measuring stick am I using here in terms of progress? Is this about volume and just ticking as many things off the list as possible? Or is it about choosing the things that really need to get done and then being really clear about what my success criteria is for that? So I would really encourage you to think about what needs to happen. You know, what does success look like for each milestone within that particular task? And take some time to understand how you're measuring your outcomes, because that then helps you feel good about what you are actually achieving. But it also means that you can have some really good conversations with your stakeholders and your team so that, you know, you're all clear on the activities and the tasks and where the energy and attention need to go in terms of which activities are going to drive the most impact. So there are lots of different things you can consider here. It's not just about, have I ticked it off the list? Because, you know, I've had on my list for the last few weeks, record podcast 1, 2, and 3, but actually, I didn't take time to really think about what success looked like. And I definitely overestimated how many I could record and underestimated how long it would take me, given that I am very new to this. But all that aside, it's about thinking through what's my criteria for that in terms of measuring my productivity and my success. So visibility, measuring sticks, success criteria. Finally, seventh thing on my list, batch tasking. So this works better in some roles than it does in others. It works better with some tasks rather than others. So taking the podcast, recording the podcast as an example, that's a task for me in my working month, working week even, that I can batch together. So I can say, okay, it's Tuesday the 19th of March, and I'm going to record 3 podcasts, and I'm going to make the time and put the boundaries in place so that I haven't got any interruptions. I've got all my prep, and I'm just going to literally roll through and record 1, 2, 3. It doesn't necessarily work as well for unplanned, unpredictable work. So what you can do there, though, is ring fence time for that sort of unpredictable, contingency time for the stuff that falls outside of repetitive tasks. You know, lots of clients that I work with get very overwhelmed with email. That actually becomes their to-do list, and that drives their day. But email is something that, yes, it's great and it can be really convenient, it can be really efficient, but it also can become the bane of our life, the overflowing inbox. So again, in terms of batch tasking, that's something that you could allocate to maybe 2 points in the day, which gives you that space, turn your notifications off, and then just check it at 2 points during the day, and then leave yourself time to get the other stuff done that you need to do. So batch tasking is something that I would definitely encourage you to explore, and with the caveat that it works better for certain things and not so well with others. So there's my 7 things. Single task, prioritize what's important, limit your distractions, take breaks, make stuff visible, be clear on what you're measuring, and think about putting tasks into batches. I hope that has been a useful first podcast for you to listen to. It's certainly been enjoyable for me now that I'm on take 4,654. And I'm just going to leave you with a little call to action. Amongst those 7 things, just think about what is the one thing you could go and experiment with to help you turn the dial on being working smarter, not harder. And remember, there's a quote that I'd like to share with you, that it's no measure of health, to be well adjusted to a sick society. And we are living in a world where we're being thrown things at us from left, right, and center, and a narrative that says we need to be more productive. And for those of us in the female species, we've also been fed the narrative that multitasking is the way to do it, but it isn't. We're just living in a society that is sick. So let's readjust, let's reset, and yeah, have a great week. Have a focused and productive week. And I'll see you in the next episode. Thank you for listening. Thanks for listening to Your Permission to Pause podcast. Please rate or review and follow or subscribe in Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. If you are a leader who wants to work smarter, not harder, so that you achieve the result you want without abandoning yourself or well-being in the process, go to joecowlin.com and find out more.